Blog Talk Radio.
I wanted to kind of talk about one of the members of the High Seas Mission, Dr. Cyan Proctor. She was with a mission, basically. This took place in Hawaii. It was like six explorers that stepped on a lava field about 8,000 feet above sea level. And basically, it was a Mars-like isolation space mission. And I wanted to, one of the researchers did a rap, and I wanted you guys to hear it, and it's a very cool rap.
My Mars rap, the selection. Who will be selected to take the ride? Fill out a form and let them decide. Are you the best of the best to be chosen above all the rest? Humanity is calling to those of us. Pay $30 without a fuss. A chance in a lifetime to be the one. Step foot on Mars to see the rising sun. Living in a space camp set on Mars, wishing to be living among the stars, selecting a cutway above the rest, knowing all too well you've got to be the best. Who will be selected to take the ride? Should we really let them decide? Who will be the best of the best? Could you really be cut above the rest? Humanity is calling to those of us, willing to pay without a fuss. A once-in-a-lifetime chance, you see, step foot on Mars to be the honoree. Living in a space camp set on Mars. Ain't no way I'll ever touch those stars. Selecting the next gen to make the jump, just another step to push us beyond the hump. Who will be selected to take the ride? I'm okay letting them decide. A chance to leave the ordinary far behind, giving one giant leap to all mankind. Living in a space camp set on Mars. Close my eyes and I'll see those stars. Knowing full well I'm past my prime, stepping foot on Mars is beyond my time.
That was from Dr. Cyan Proctor. She was one of the researchers that went to the High Seas Mission that took place in Hawaii. And there was six researchers. They basically stayed for 120 days, 4 months. It was like a Mars mock, kind of like a Mars mission, Mars mock mission. And wait a minute here. Okay. We will be right back and tune in. I think we have one of the researchers will be right back. 1 second.
Flavor Living Radio. Talk about food and life and more. Cooking, restaurants, and recipes with adventures too. Just wait and see. Flavor Living Radio.
Hello?
Yes, this is Brian from Flavor Living Radio. One of our
Hi,
guests
Brian.
Today is Dr. Cyan Proctor, and I want to welcome Dr. Proctor. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm doing fine. Now I know it's been 2 weeks now since the mission, because the mission ended on August the 13th. What have you been doing? Tell me as far as what things have you guys taken for granted. What have you been doing?
Okay, well, I've been doing a lot of eating of fresh foods because everything we had was, you know, dehydrated or freeze-dried, so it was really nice to eat a salad and to have grilled meat, things that we just didn't have when we were in the habitat. And then just enjoying being outside. Boy, I've been lucky. The weather has been terrific, and just getting out, feeling the fresh air and walking around and just enjoying the weather.
Wow. I mean, now, could you tell us what is the High Seas Mission? Tell us about that and what was it about. I know it took place in Hawaii because I know our listeners would love to know, would like to know.
Yeah. The High Seas Mission was a NASA-funded food study. We were looking at food preparation strategies for long-duration space exploration. So one of the things that happens now with astronauts on the ISS, the International Space Station, is that they get food apathy. That means on long space flights, they tend to not want to eat because of physiological changes and other things that might be happening. And if you end up going on a really long mission to someplace like Mars, where you are on a planet and have gravity, then you can change the food the astronauts are eating. You can now cook because of that, of having gravity, and you can start mixing ingredients and stuff. It just becomes easier. And so NASA wants to know what are the advantages to allowing astronauts to be able to prepare their own meals. Can that tackle some of the issues with food apathy?
So this would be the first time astronauts will be cooking in space.
Yeah, I mean, they've done some things where they've been able to mix ingredients and do stuff, but to really be able to, you know, prepare meals similar to the way in which we prepare meals on Earth is having that gravity and being able to mix things and, you know, sizzle and boil and do all kinds of, and bake, all the fun things that we like to do here on Earth. You want to, being able to do that, this would be a first time on these long-duration space flights.
Well, because, I noticed that as far as, like, cooking, you know, because a lot of it, we use a lot of water to cook, you know, as far as boiling, so it would be different on as far as on the mission. Ingredients did you guys...
Well, that's one of the things that they wanted to measure was, you know, basically you're talking about managing your resources. And so when you go from ready-prepared meals where you just add water, then the amount of energy you're using, the amount of water you're using both to make the meal and for cleanup all become a lot simpler. When you start cooking, all of the amount of energy, the amount of water uses, and the resources – you expend a lot more. And so NASA really wants to know what's that sweet spot between managing your resources and your water allotment versus having a healthy, happy crew. And so it's difficult to, you know, if you cut out cooking because you want to just manage your resources, but then if you have an unhappy, unproductive crew, then you're not going to be accomplishing your mission.
Yeah, so everybody has to stay positive and upbeat. And, wow. Okay.
Yeah,
now,
and healthy.
True. That is important today in 2013, to stay healthy.
Yes.
Who was a part of the High Seas Mission crew? I know they were chosen out of, like, kind of like the American Idol. They were chosen out of 700 applicants, and only six were chosen. And there was the American Idol of science, mathematics, and engineers. So can you tell us about the crew, the other five that were chosen?
Absolutely. Yeah, and so there was a call out put out for people to apply for the project, and you basically had to meet the minimum requirements to be an astronaut. So you had to be in good health, and you had to have a science background. And over 700 people applied, and they did a terrific job of weeding down to six people to make up this first crew. And so we had our commander, Angelo Vermilion, who is Belgian, and he's a TED Fellow. And then we had our crew writer was Kate Green, and she blogged for both The Economist and for Discover Magazine. And then we had Oleg Abramov, and he is a USGS geologist. So he was a crew geologist, and he was out of Flagstaff, Arizona. But interesting enough, he was born in Russia and became and moved here when he was 12 years old to the United States.
Okay.
So really nice international crew. Then we had Jahira Fira Sastra, and she was born and raised in Puerto Rico and from Cornell University, and she was our material scientist. So she was looking at microbial growth. And then from Canada, we had Simon Engler, who is a roboticist and astrophysics, math. He had a lot of real diverse background, but mainly came in doing robotics, and he was a crew engineer, so making sure the habitat ran. And then there was me and from South Mountain Community College in Phoenix, Arizona. I am a geology professor, and I love food.
Okay. Well, now what was your, as far as your research part for the high seas mission, what did you take as far as?
You know, that's kind of interesting because I came in as the education outreach officer, and instead of doing having a scientific research project like the other people, my job was to document life in the habitat for the website. So if you go to high-seas.org, you'll see our website. And so I made sure that the website had material on it. But then I also ran our food contest before going into the mission. Yes, we put out a shout-out for people to submit recipes using ingredients from our pantry, which is self-stable ingredients, and we got over 70 recipes submitted in five categories: breakfast, main meals, snacks, and then soups and stews and desserts. And from that...
Right. No, I heard that lot of the contestants had to name their own creation, their own dish.
Yes, so they did. They came up with some really creative names. And so I was pleasantly surprised by how creative the entries were.
Now did basically the people who entered the contest, they weren't just from America. Were they from all over the United the globe, global?
They were, and the majority were from the United States, but we definitely had some international recipes come in, and so it was kind of nice to see that. Like, we had this one which was let me think about it. It was Sampa from Tibet. Now the people who submitted it live in Canada, but their heritage was from Tibet, and we had Sampa porridge we made. Yeah.
Wow. So I know everybody had to have just the courage to be on the mission. You have to have courage, but the courage to try different meals from different countries and just different meals. Could you tell us what is? Because I know when you're doing a mission to Mars and their foods would be different. What is dehydrated, freeze dehydrated, and re-dehydrated? Because I know the meals would be different because the weight, like if we weigh 100 pounds on Earth, on Mars we would weigh 38 pounds. So I know the meals are totally different.
Exactly. Well, the main thing is when you're launching anything into space is weight. And water weighs a lot. I mean, when you pick up that, gallon of water, you know that it's just incredible how much it weighs. And so in order to reduce the weight of materials you're sending on a long-duration space flight, everything is either freeze-dried or dehydrated. And basically, those are just processes of removing the water. And so, and when you freeze-dried meats, you know, you take out the water, that means not only do they become lighter, but then they become shelf-stable, and they don't go bad for a long time, and that's what you want. And so we have freeze-dried or dehydrated fruits, vegetables, and meats. And then it was our job to rehydrate them by adding the water back in, which was a pretty simple process. I mean, you just take hot water and you add it in, and the meat just soaks it right up.
Wow, so it just becomes like basically comes alive again as far as the
food. It does. Yeah, and it becomes it's like a cooked version of the meat. So if you had ground beef or diced beef or chicken, when you add the when you add the hot water to it, or it doesn't even need to be hot, but it's nice when it rehydrates faster when it's hot. When you add the water back, it becomes cooked ground beef or cooked diced beef or chicken. So you can eat it right then and there.
Now, I was looking at some of the winners, and I wanted to kind of go through some of the winners, and you could kind of tell if you can tell our listeners about some of the recipes and some of the ingredients. Now, I saw for
Absolutely.
Breakfast they had a no-crust quiche muffin.
Yes.
Could you tell us, just the quiche alone, you know, that's with eggs, and how did that, what was the ingredients, how did that happen as far as putting that together?
You know, some of your listeners might remember powdered eggs and just how horrible powdered eggs were when you added water. Well, now they have egg crystals, and they're surprisingly delicious. And so, again, they've taken the egg and they've dehydrated it, but into a crystal form that is very similar to scrambled eggs. And so what we could do is we could make omelets, we could make anything that required egg, we could basically rehydrate this and use it. And so one of the recipes was this no-crust quiche muffin, and it was terrific because it was so simple. You just take a muffin pan and you put some Crisco grease in it so it doesn't stick, and then you take your egg crystals and your water, and you rehydrate it to become water. And then you just pour it into these muffin tins and bake it at 350 for a half hour, and you get these light, fluffy, delicious egg quiches. And
wow.
What we did was because we had dehydrated vegetables, we rehydrated vegetables and just added them in. So once you put you can put your mushrooms or your spinach or your onions in the muffin tin and then just pour in your egg mixture and then top it off with some rehydrated cheddar cheese, bake it in the oven, and then it comes out and it's delicious.
I like. Now,
I really like this one too because you can freeze it also. Like you can keep it's easy to keep the leftovers and just freeze them and then microwave them.
Well, you know, I've had breakfast for dinner before, so I know this seems like a dish you can have at any time, like breakfast, lunch, or dinner, you know.
Absolutely, and that's one of the nice things, too, that very easy to make, cleanup is easy, so I enjoyed that.
Now, how about the Moroccan beef tagine? How is this? Tagine?
Yeah, tagine, Moroccan beef tagine. This one was really interesting. Again, the person who submitted this, you have to use shelf-stable ingredients. And one of the things that we had was we had the couscous, we had the cashews, the diced beef, and all the vegetables. And when Jahira and I made this together on Meals for Mars,
I saw you two together.
Yes, and when we first looked at the recipe, we thought, oh, my goodness, because the list of ingredients was huge. I mean, you had Saison Goya packets, you had saffron, you had honey, you had cilantro, you had cumin. I mean, and we were just like, oh, my goodness, this is going to take a long, and we didn't know. And it was really easy. It was easier than we thought it was going to be, and the crew loved it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, for as far as desserts, I saw, what was it called, Martian skin? Yeah, I want to, just the name alone sounds like.
Exactly. Yeah, that one was one that was very intriguing. And so it was a fun one for the crew to make because, again, very simple. I was surprised at the creativity and how simple some of these recipes were. The Martian skin, all you need is a packet of Jell-O and water. And you basically just heat the Jell-O and water up in a pan until it becomes kind of gooey. And then you just pour it onto a cookie sheet that has been lightly greased. And then you just let it sit until it's, congealed and becomes solid. And then you just peel it off, and it's literally kind of like skin, and you can eat. So, of course, we chose green Jell-O to use for Martian green.
Right.
And we had a lot of fun kind of like just pulling it and stretching it and then eating it. So that's a fun one to do with kids. And you can find all of these recipes on the High Seas website under What's Cooking Meals for Mars.
Well, now, I want to just real quickly just kind of give some buzzwords, and if you can kind of say the first thing that that you think of, you know, as far as the High Seas Mission. How about spam? Tell me about spam. The word spam.
Spam. Coming in, I would have classified it as mystery meat. Leaving the High Seas program, I classify it as surprisingly tasty when you sizzle it up. And so we had a lot of meals, recipes. One of the things with the recipe contest, because it was in Hawaii and the Hawaiian culture as being voyagers and all that stuff, we really wanted to connect with the local population. And so we said if you use Hawaiian ingredients, you know, we're looking for recipes that would incorporate that, and spam is one of those things. And so we got a bunch of recipes that involved spam, and we were all surprised by what you could do with spam. And I had never cooked with spam ever in my life until coming here, and you get it sizzling. I tell you, that spam fried rice was absolutely delicious.
I mean, I want to try. Now, I think you guys should come out with like a Mars High Seas cookbook. You know, that would be good, just with all the dishes, and because I would get it myself. And I know a lot of people on the planet would buy this book, you know, like a cookbook for us to see, different dishes.
I think the principal investigators, that's something that they really want to, are thinking seriously about doing. And I agree with you because when you're dealing with shelf-stable ingredients, a lot of times we haven't, the population hasn't used that. Now, a lot of your preppers and survivalists are more familiar with shelf-stable ingredients. Or if you are an avid backpacker and camper, you might be more familiar with shelf-stable ingredients. But the average household isn't. And now we're starting to see, when you go to the supermarket, you're just now starting to see shelf-stable ingredients more easily available. I was in my local store just the other day, and I actually took a picture of it because I was surprised. But Lighthouse is coming out with all of these freeze-dried ingredients that you can buy in glass jars, whether it's oregano or basil. Say that again.
I said the trend is catching on. So I mean, you could tell as far as reality TV shows, like the show. I know you were on the Colony, so I know basically did you guys use some of those items on there on the TV show?
A lot of that dealt with scavenging and whatever you could find.
Okay.
And a lot of it, you know, you would go in. It was an area that had not recovered from Katrina. So if you could go in and find stuff that you could use. And it was really funny because we found, syrup and syrup that expired like, you know, 3 to 4 years earlier, but everybody was so excited to see syrup that we ate it anyways, you know. And so when you see the expiration date on things, sometimes you're kind of like, okay, you know, what are you going to get sick or not? But the whole idea of fresh ingredients is great for when you're going to cook right away. But if you need to store, you know, ingredients, then these new freeze-dried and dehydrated things that are coming out are terrific.
Mm-hmm. Now, I saw that the University of Hawaii and Cornell and the and really the main NASA. Now, what did you think about that, just putting this all together, you know, for this mission?
It's a terrific collaboration, you know, when you get you research one institutions like Cornell University or University of Hawaii and, you know, partnering with NASA. NASA provided the funding, and to be able to have the university involved, the university being able to get students involved and kind of just build that excitement around, you know, long-duration space flight and space exploration. As a teacher myself, I know that trying to find ways to inspire kids to think about math, science, engineering, and technology as a career is extremely important. And these are ways in which you can get students involved. We had student internships, interns that came and helped out behind the scenes and with keeping the HAB up and running while we were doing the mission. And so I think having those kind of collaborations are really important.
Well, I saw they're going to have basically 3 more missions, one with 4 months, 8 months, and then 12 months. And
that's
how I would like to keep up with it. And will you be involved with those? And as far as those missions?
Yeah, probably I will be involved to some extent, but not. I won't be formally putting any research in. You know, I actually returned back to my community college job in Phoenix, Arizona at South Mountain. Today was my first day back, and I'm in
the
classroom again.
I know you're just gravitated. They gravitated.
It's going to, you know, and so now what I'm concentrating on is bringing some of the things that I've learned over the last year of being on sabbatical and participating in this program into the classroom to help inspire the students.
Wow. Well, Dr. Cyan Proctor, I want to thank you for being on Flavor Living Radio. It's been an honor to basically have one of the research members out of 700. I mean, one more question. Can you say, like, about your crew? How did you, before signing off, could you give, you know, any type of message to the High Seas crew, the 5 members that you worked with?
Yeah, amazing. you know, they did the principal investigators did a terrific job when it came to crew selection. Everybody had talents that just were so necessary and came together at just the right time. We laughed a lot. We really enjoyed learning about each other's culture and what they like to cook. And overall, it was just a terrific experience, and I'm really thankful to have been part of it.
Wow. Well, thank you, Dr. Proctor, for being on with us on Flavor Living, and we got to have you back, you know.
Absolutely.
And we got to see this cookbook. We got to see this recipe.
I think that would be great.
Have you on the food channel?
I love it, and I love cooking, so it was a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. And
you
have a great Mars adventure. So some cookbooks and food channel. We got to see more. All right.
That sounds good. Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye now.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.